Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I am the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming live from Jupiter, Florida, in the studios of WJUP 103.9 FM, Sunday morning, January 17th, 2016. One can also hear this program live streaming. My guest this morning is Professor James M. Longo of Washington and Jefferson College, author of From the Classroom to the White House, Presidents and First Ladies as Students and Teachers. Our subject today will cover a lot of ground, hopefully, and basically is, why do students hate history? What can we learn about how presidents viewed history and presidential electoral rhetoric in the past and the present? Is it getting worse? As I say each week, the mission of the advocates is to bring to the public differing views on current public policy issues. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. And of course, public education is the public policy of the United States. Welcome back, Professor Longo, to the Advocates, and thank you for joining me today. I think the last time we talked on the Advocates was almost 2 years ago.
That's correct. Good to talk to you. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you. Professor Jim Longo is a native of St. Louis, Missouri, and was an award-winning public school teacher for more than a decade. He has a degree from the University of Missouri, his doctorate in teaching and teaching curriculum and learning from the Harvard University, where I give a plug to my daughter, who has been working at the Kennedy School there in recruitment for many, many years. Dr. Longo's research and teaching have taken to Austria, Brazil, Costa Rica, Portugal, England, Scotland, Wales. I'm jealous already. Germany, the Czech Republic, and Canada. And he's under his leadership, the Washington and Jefferson Educational Department has developed school partnerships around the globe. He's currently the chair of the Education Department of Washington and Jefferson College. And if you want to know where that is, it's in Washington, Pennsylvania. And his last biography was of Isabella Orleans Braganza, the Brazilian princess who freed the slaves. It was nominated for a Yale University's Frederick Douglass Book Prize for the most outstanding book in English on the subject of slavery and abolition, and the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights Book Award it received. He's been a Fulbright Scholar. That's not bad in itself, as the author of 6 books. And by the way, before we start, and I'll remind everyone later, all the information on my guests, and certainly Professor Longo, will be posted on www.theadvocatesradio.com, along with the audio of this broadcast. Professor Longo, you've been training future history teachers for a long time, and to no one's real surprise, you and the public are finding out that students hate history. Could you tell us how this attitude germinated and why?
Well, I'll try. It is troubling. I'll often ask our future teachers their favorite subject, their least favorite subject, their favorite teacher, their least favorite teacher. And so often, my students who are becoming teachers from pre-K up through high school will say that they hate history. They find it boring. They find it uninteresting. It doesn't connect to them. And I have people sitting next to them who want to teach history. And so I'll say, how do you respond to this? And they're kind of speechless. And I think it's happened over time. I think it's been a very gradual thing. But it's a very disturbing trend. At one time, history was very important in the curriculum. But for many years, it's been marginalized. It's been watered down. It's been neglected in schools. Since it's not included in the high-stakes testing that has become so important in schools, No Child Left Behind, The Race to the Top, government initiatives have really ignored, neglected, or dismissed history. And I think that's part of the problem. Teachers don't have time to teach it because if it's not on the test, it's not taught. And that's certainly a big part of the problem. So history has been cut back in the schools. I work with a lot of schools here and everywhere. And sometimes what they call social studies as history is taught 15 minutes a week. Mm. And I think that's part of the problem. And when it is taught, the teachers try to cram so much in that it just becomes nothing but trivial.
You know, it's interesting, and I want to reflect a little in depth on this, because obviously this has been coming on for a long time. This didn't start yesterday, you know. Rome wasn't built in a day, as they said. You know, in 1989, the educator Francis Fukuyama wrote, "The end of history is not an original one. The best-known propagator was Karl Marx, who believed that the direction of historical development was purposeful, one determined by the interplay of material forces and would come to an end only with the achievement of a communist utopia that would finally resolve all prior contradictions. But the concept of history as a dialectical process with a beginning, a middle, and an end was borrowed by Marx from his great German predecessor, Hegel." Does Professor Longo, and this is a very intellectual perspective on history and where it's going, does that have any relevance to why young people do not see its importance? Do they not see and gravitate the theme of history?
Well, I don't think that they do, and I think it's interesting that you would quote Marx. One thing that we see in totalitarian dictatorship is one of the first things they try to do is control what's taught and what's not taught, who's celebrated and who's not celebrated. And if you control the history, they control the future. And they understand that. And so it's not surprising that in dictatorships, what's happening in the United States is one of the first things that they do, either by sins of omission or sins of commission, either by neglect or on purpose. Critical thinking, the study of the past, is being thrown out. And I think that that's very dangerous. And I think that's part of the problem. I also think that if history is taught creatively and correctly, it can be controversial. And I think a lot of teachers are not prepared to deal with the controversies, the questions that history brings up.
Yeah, well,
and it's watered down.
Right. And in a sense, maybe what Marx was referring to was the state versus the individual. In history, we look at the individual. How did the individual move the state? How did the individual move forward, where maybe Marx was saying the individual doesn't count as much, therefore whatever the state says is more critical to his well-being?
That's right. The state is everything, and people are nothing. And the terrible, sad, tragic history of the Soviet Union, Communist Russia, these communist satellites, really indicates how little individuals matter. And one thing that I think history teaches is that people do matter.
That's
men and women make a difference.
Right. It's the history.
And that's something that is not taught, because which men and women do you choose? Which men and women do you hold up as models? They so often history is taught that this is a villain, this is a hero. This was a good person, this was a bad person.
Right.
Rather than teach the complexity of human beings, the struggle to do what is right, they don't teach the complexity of decision-making. And in a totalitarian country, some of the countries I visited who have been the countries that have been behind the Iron Curtain, it's very clear that people have been so marginalized and their own history has been stolen from them.
Sure.
Anybody who opposed the regime is no longer existent. They're gone. They've vanished.
Exactly. And in a sense, the word history is his story. You know, that's the story. It isn't just it's not only the individual, but the individual within the theme of what has happened. You know, when I was a youngster, not long after World War II, there was an intense interest in history, especially reflecting the great Allied victory in the war. And, of course, why were people interested? Because their relatives were part of this. You know, they feared for them. They looked at maps. They worried about where they were in the world. Could it be, Professor Longo, that today's youngsters are frustrated with the failure of our political leaders to solve the problems we face?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think we live in a very cynical age. We don't live in a time of heroes. Although, when I ask my students, do you have heroes? Who are your heroes? The good news is they do have heroes. Their heroes very often are their mother and father.
Yes.
And people they know personally who have touched their life. Usually parents, especially nowadays it's parents. And that's another whole issue, the way parenting has changed. But when, during the Second World War, you had these giants, Stalin, who actually was very short, but nevertheless, you know, you had the Stalins, and you had the Franklin Roosevelts, and you had the Winston Churchills.
Plus all the generals and admirals we knew. You know.
Well, that's right. I mean, MacArthur in the Pacific, and General Eisenhower, and General Rommel, and, Zhirkov. I mean, these were amazing people. And you wanted to emulate them. You wanted to know about them. And you talked about, you know, following on maps. This is another thing. Geography is often no longer taught. So there's not a time and a place for young people to connect.
Yeah, you know.
In some ways, even though we've got all the technology, their universe has shrunk rather than expanded.
And it's interesting that there's two juxtapositions. One I know of. I think a lot of young people are caught up with the myth of these superheroes. They've removed themselves from reality. We used to have Superman and Batman, etc., but they were, it was a time to put childish things down, so we put down the comic books. But now all these movies who celebrate this fictional idea of superheroes solving problems wherein it demeans our regular people. It says, well, our regular people can't do that, you know?
It's true, but it shows, if you look at the popularity of the Star Wars, the new Star Wars and the old Star Wars, and the superheroes, the Marvel comics are being made into huge successful films. Young people are hungry for heroes,
right,
but they embrace fictional heroes, science fiction. The Hunger Games, and so many of the books, the fictional books that the kids read, are about the future, and the future is very dark. The future is devoid of heroes. So who becomes the heroes? The kids become the heroes. Very often, the adults are villains, and the young people are heroes because they're surrounded by evil. In some ways, kids are very cynical today. And there were times when kids were much more idealistic, in part because we did look at political figures and see heroes. I look around my office now, and I've got pictures of different politicians that, to me, were heroes. And, men and women who, when I grew up, were just somebody you wanted to emulate.
Sure.
They were not saints.
No.
But they weren't all complete sinners either. But they did very good things.
Well, that's true. They were a mixture. They were a mixture of the good, bad, and ugly, and hopefully the good, won out. You know, this gets back to the concept of the great man theory of history in the past, heroic concept of history. They don't seem to be in the minds of a lot of young people, great men, women around. So is this, again, does this reflect on the disillusionment with the dearth of worldwide leadership, or great men or women aren't around, and it turns off people, off youngster.
I think you're right, and I find that when I was doing my research on the presidents and first ladies as students and teachers, when I was doing some work on JFK, I spent time out in Massachusetts at the Kennedy Library, and I talked to a number of the Kennedys. But most of the, one of the things I emphasized was the work that the Kennedys did in special education.
Right.
Almost all the research that I did on this, I had to get from England and Europe, because in Europe, Kennedy is a huge hero in Berlin, in England, across Europe. And in education, he's a huge hero because of the work he's done in special education.
Right.
In the United States, the the kids where he slept with Marilyn Monroe.
Mm, yeah, right.
And that, you know, that, you know, it's that part of the presidents that they focus on, and something's lost in that. I think something is really lost in that.
Yeah.
Because as you said, there's the good, the bad, the ugly. The thing that about the heroes is, yes, there's good, bad, and ugly, and here's some good that they did despite being human. And I think that's been, the baby's been thrown out with the bathwater with it, with that. Because history of heroes, that has become very unpopular among historians, and it's really been dismissed. But I think we still need heroes.
Oh, I think we do, and I think we need for young people to understand the limitations of human beings, you know?
I think that's an important lesson for all of us to learn. I think it's important to teach our children that.
Yeah, you can.
Grandchildren,
right. It doesn't mean that everybody deserves a trophy for showing up, but it does mean, it does mean in a sense that you can get pull yourself up. You know, you can get...
If you,
right. Go ahead.
Yeah, and if you look at an Abraham Lincoln who, you know, lost his mother when he was very young, had a wonderful stepmother, had a difficult time with his own biological father,
right,
had a difficult marriage, struggled with depression,
right,
you know, waffled on the whole race issue, and yet really is considered one of the great...
Great. Well, the great men. And we only have a short time before our first break, but that's 100% true. What made Franklin Delano Roosevelt? You know, in the State of the Union address, President Obama last night referred to Lincoln and Roosevelt and able to do that. Of course, it was more or less glossed over the problems they did have, the hatred they did face, the challenges they did face. But as you said, they overcame the problems that beset them. And it wasn't a bed of roses for either one of them. And it wasn't a bed of roses for T.R. It wasn't a bed of roses for John F. Kennedy. It wasn't a bed of roses for Clinton and many others. So I think when people learn through history the story of the triumph of man, the rise of man, that should be, you know, sort of an encouragement to individuals to seek out these stories. And now, of course, as we try to address, how do you reverse that disillusionment? Maybe we're going to go into some of these in our next segment regarding the presidents and what they thought of education, which I think is, you know, really your expertise, no question. So we're going to go to a break. Before we hear from our sponsors, this is The Advocates with Richard J. Garfunkel on WJUP 103.9 FM radio in Jupiter, Florida, January 17th, Sunday morning at 8 a.m. I'm talking to my guest, Professor James Longo, Chairman of the Educational Department at Washington and Jefferson University in Washington, PA, and we'll be back in a few seconds. Thank you. Welcome back to The Advocates and my guest, Professor James Longo. This is The Advocates, of course, with Richard J. Garfunkel on WJUP 103.9 FM radio in Jupiter, Florida, Sunday morning at 8 a.m. I have been talking to my guest about why students hate history. You know, we're going to switch topics a bit now. I think we've wrung that one out. And from the average student to the presidency, the highest office in the greatest land and the most democratic system, and talk about some of the holders of these offices and their views on education. Professor Longo, speaking of our first 15 presidents from Washington, Buchanan, who are some of the best and worst students that you came in contact with?
Well, it's interesting. I sometimes tell my students that if we could put all the presidents and first ladies together in a time machine and put them in one classroom, they would be every teacher's nightmare.
That's great.
They really were a handful. You know, George Washington was a great man who never could get the grammar right and never could get the spelling right and was mortified by it because he thought he never did have a good education. Dolly Madison dropped out of school because The girls were mean to her. They were jealous of her, and they said she was flirting all the time because she had this vivacious personality and was very popular with girls, boys, men, and they were jealous of her. John Tyler, who was a president, was very bored in school. He physically attacked his teacher, tied him up, and put him in the closet with his friends. He was the ringleader of a physical attack on the teacher, and left the teacher there.
a lot of people want to do that.
Well, many of us have thought of would like to do that with our teacher, but the teacher was left there overnight.
Oh, boy.
And when the teacher got out, went to the father and complained, and the father said, well, if you can't control your class, that's what you deserve.
Yeah, well, my mother gave more support to the teacher, my teachers, than
yes,
Tyler's father did. And I think Tyler had like 13 children, so he must have had his hands full. That's very good.
He did, yes.
Well, you know, speaking of one of the great of the early presidents, Andrew Jackson, pretty much of a highly rated one, who's been under historical scrutiny and revisionism these days, but he was not well educated, but eventually taught school, studied law, and was admitted to the bar. Was this highly unusual for a man who was born in the rural part of America in those days?
Well, yes and no. He had brothers. He had two brothers. His mother, he was not the oldest, but his mother felt he was the smartest.
Mm.
And his other brothers went to a one-room schoolhouse. She sent him to an academy. So he actually had a better education than many. He was a very good reader. He said he'd only read one book in his life, which was not true. He could quote the Bible. He could quote Shakespeare.
It sounds like Trump. He only reads one book, the Bible now. Man,
did
he become religious overnight?
Andrew Jackson had red hair. He was a drooler. He drooled a lot. He couldn't control the drooling in his mouth, and he was very small. He was in many, many fights as he was a child. He had a very bad temper, and he used it to his advantage. He became a fighter in school and in life.
Yes.
And he became very successful. He did teach at a one-room schoolhouse, which was not easy for anybody to do, when he was 16.
Hmm.
There were kids who were 21, 22 in the class. He controlled the class.
Yeah.
He was a remarkable man.
Yes, he certainly was, and he's going through revisionism, especially, you know, regarding the Seminoles and, you know, all the things that, you know, slavery and this, of course, it's going to be very interesting
But, you know, he also adopted an Indian orphan and raised him as his son.
Right. Yeah, well,
and,
that's,
you know,
that's knowing the history.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
Right. You know, as an expert on the presidents and their families and their relationship to education, I want to jump ahead to Abraham Lincoln, who is so critical to our history. Tell us about Lincoln, his education, what his legacy was with regards to schooling. And did he influence the thinking with regards to expecting our presidents to be well-educated or intellectuals?
Well, you know, again, Lincoln's one of those people. You travel overseas, and Lincoln's statues are in Edinburgh and London and, you know, in different places across Europe you wouldn't expect. There was a statue of Abraham Lincoln. He's a real hero. Trotsky was visiting some small village in Russia, and there was a picture of Abraham Lincoln on the wall. I mean, this is a man who's had an influence way beyond what anybody would have imagined when he was a kid. The word that most people used to describe Lincoln when he was growing up was lazy.
Mm.
He was lazy because he avoided physical work and wanted to read all the time. That's how he educated himself. He only was in school about a year. If you put all the school days together, he had very little education, but he had a great teacher because he taught himself.
Mm. And, you know, some
reading.
Yeah, some people say that he was one of the greatest writers of the 19th century.
He was a remarkable writer. He was an amazing thinker. The people who knew him and his family said he was bright, but his sister was brighter.
Hmm.
But his sister died very young in childbirth. at a different time or another place, we might be talking about her, not him.
Yeah.
He was a remarkable man, and he could change, and that was one of the great things. The first public speech he ever gave was about public education. The last public speech he ever gave was about education. He understood the value of education.
And that's critical. I think that's what we see being demeaned in our society, this anti-intellectualism. Don't confuse me with the facts. You know, let's ignore science. This is kind of a revisionism to religion at its most extreme. You know, there are people today who forgot that 15 of the 16 founding fathers were deists. They weren't particularly religious, you know, and
a lot of people use those same people to justify their own positions, and they've not read these writings or really know these people,
right?
What they believed and what they said and why they said it.
And that's part of the nuance of history, teaching what is our story? What is it about? No, as I've said to many people and my children, history doesn't go in a straight line. There are ups and downs. There's all sorts of things that go on that influence people, the great events, the tidal flows, the ripple effect of the great events that affect future generations. You know, getting past Lincoln, one of the most remarkable men in history, who was the 16th president, America goes through a long period of mostly forgotten, unexceptional presidents up until the accidental rise of Theodore Roosevelt. Were there any other outstanding students, intellects, or presidents who taught in that period of 35 years?
Well, James Garfield was a remarkable teacher and taught many, many things. And I think if he had lived, I think he would have had a greater impact on education than almost any other president.
Mm.
He really believed in education. He was assassinated very early in his administration.
Yes.
But he was a real teacher, and you think he would have been a real teacher president. Ulysses S. Grant always wanted to be a teacher. He wanted to be a math teacher. He couldn't get a job. He tried.
Mm. Yeah.
He tried at Washington University in St. Louis. He tried at West Point. But he was a remarkable writer. His memoirs are still read, and they're beautifully written.
Yes.
Nobody would have expected it of him because he was so shy as a child. And
he was broke. He was sick with cancer. Mark Twain financed him. And the truth is that his biography became one of the most successful books in history at that time.
Yes, it's a great book on the friendship that changed America, which is Grant and Mark Twain. And it's a very interesting friendship and relationship between these two remarkable Americans.
And that goes back to our earlier little colloquy on who can tell who is going to get somewhere. Look at Grant's background. Look at where he graduated in West Point, and who expected greatness from him.
Well, this is it. When I've studied, in my study of the presidents and first ladies, almost none of them were ever imagined to end up in the White House, even be successful. This is something I tell my students who are becoming teachers: never write off a child. You just do not know. And Einstein said, part of our job is to find the magic and the genius in each child.
Sure.
And I think that's very important, because these young people who grew up to be presidents and first ladies really did not always show the great potential. Rose Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's mother, said that people think that if you end up in the White House, you must have gone through your childhood with a halo and just been a perfect child. She said that was not Jack Kennedy.
Hmm. Yeah, well, it's true, and there is no magic formula. It comes from within. Each child is a universe. Each soul is a universe to themselves. Part of the greatness of America has been the ability to nurture this. And part of the nurturing has been our great educational system. That's the question, what we've been discussing. Part of the system, is it forgetting history and its criticality? We're going to go to another commercial break. And before we hear a word from our sponsors, this is The Advocates with Richard J. Garfunkel on WJUP 103.9 FM radio in Jupiter, Florida, on January 17th, Sunday morning. I've been talking to my guest, Professor James Longo, chairman of the Education Department at Washington Jefferson University in Washington, PA. And we'll be back in a few moments to continue to revisit this question of presidents, education, and history. We'll be back in a minute or so. Welcome back to The Advocates and my guest, Professor James Longo. This is Richard J. Garfunkel on WJUP 103.9 FM in Jupiter, Florida, Sunday morning. I've been talking to my guest, Professor James Longo, chairman of the Education Department at Washington and Jefferson University, talking about the death of history. We spent some time on why kids aren't that interested. Now we've sort of morphed into the presidency. Then we go from the lowest level, a student, and up to the highest level in our democracy. Professor, as an expert on the presidents and reflective of the early part of the 20th century, Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson rank as two of our greatest intellectual presidents. But today, they, even though they would be thought as quite similar in religion, race, and progressive philosophy, the personalities were quite different, and frankly, they didn't like each other. Could you describe their records as students, and was Wilson's academic career the most unique among presidents?
Well, that's a good question. Wilson said when he became president of the United States, what a great country that a schoolmaster can end up in the White House. Of course, many teachers ended up in the White House, but his own school career was very checkered. He was a very poor student academically. He was sent to a school, and the school told his parents that they thought he was not teachable. He could not learn. They thought he was not particularly bright. He couldn't read until he was 9 or 10. And depending on which family member you listen to, he had learning problems, and he couldn't take tests. He had to have on-time tests, because if the test was time, he was so conscious of the clock ticking that he could not concentrate.
Oh, boy.
So he really struggled in school, and when he went back for his doctorate, he made a deal with the university that none of his tests would be timed, or he wouldn't be able to graduate.
Unbelievable.
But at that time, he was successful, and he was able to talk his way past that. He had dropped out of school at one point. He was going to be a lawyer, dropped out, and really struggled, became a very successful professor at Princeton University, one of the most popular they've ever had, then president of the university, then governor of New Jersey, and then president. A very bright man, very rigid, which, of course, really affected his health over time. But a really amazing human being.
Teddy Roosevelt
never went to school when he was little because he was so sick. They never thought he was going to live.
Right.
And he, when he finally went to Harvard, was in trouble all the time because he was one of those obnoxious students who actually was interested in what was going on and would ask questions. And by obnoxious, I mean a great student.
Yeah.
And after he was at the first class, he different questions in the course of the period. And finally, the professor said, here, Mr. Roosevelt, I'm teaching this class. Shut up.
Yeah, I could see that with Teddy Roosevelt, who his daughter, Princess Alice, said that he wanted to be the bride at every wedding and even the corpse at every funeral. Yes. Well,
remarkable extrovert. And, of course, Wilson was an introvert.
Right. And
so
it's,
again, there's no one type of person who becomes president.
And that's right. So collectively, when we look back at them as white, Protestant males, educated, you know, we look back and say, boy, shouldn't, and progressives, shouldn't they have gotten along? And they didn't. They actually disliked each other. So philosophy.
Oil and water.
Right.
Oil and water, the two of them.
Right. And very interesting in that sense. And, of course, that's what you learn from history. In more recent times, some presidents not only stand out as being interested in history, but would refer to history. Who were these presidents, and have they often looked upon their role as educator-in-chief?
Well, they have. You know, Bill Clinton, for all his humanness,
that's
the good and the bad and the ugly, whatever you want to say, people said when he became president, why is this guy from Arkansas so interested in education? He really was interested in education.
Right.
And his secretary of education said he knew that education made him.
Mm.
He knew the difference good teachers made and how important education is. He was very committed to education. Again, a big reader. Harry Truman, you never got to, was a huge reader of history. He checked out more books from the Library of Congress than most of the other senators combined.
Yeah.
He was a constant reader of history.
Yeah.
And that really influenced him, I think, into being very successful with a lot of the decisions he made. John F. Kennedy was a huge reader of history. Loved it, always thought he would become a history professor, but that didn't work out. Jackie Kennedy said the thing that she was most ashamed of when she looked back on her schooling was, number one, she was always afraid to show she was intelligent, because girls were not supposed to be intelligent, which is why she often acted out in class, was called the naughtiest girl in class, was always sent out of class for misbehaving, because she said, all I wanted to do was be left alone to read.
Right. You know, it's also interesting, reflective of FDR, who was a great protagonist in terms of stamp collecting, which offered him this great idea of geography. And he would use his map in his map room for reporters who would come in, and in his 999 press conferences, unprecedented in the whole history of the, you know, the country. Maybe he had more press conferences than all the presidents put together. I'm pretty sure he did. And he would point to the maps and talk about where places were. And people were astounded that he knew these places. And I think that's part of what you become an educated individual, is to know first your history, your personal history, your history of your time, where you live, in relationship to other. It's almost like understanding where the earth is in relationship to the solar system and everything else.
Yes, FDR was had that special quality of, he was curious.
Mm.
He was curious, and his own school experiences were miserable. Didn't have friends at school. He was picked on. He was bullied. He wrote very painful letters home about how homesick he was. He did everything to be pulled out of school. And it just was a terrible experience. His Eleanor Roosevelt loved school. School made her.
Right.
She had a wonderful experience. She had a very unhappy childhood and a wonderful experience in school, and she loved school. Franklin Roosevelt had a wonderful childhood. He traveled a lot when he was little. And then school was a miserable experience. Said, I don't know what happened to him in school, but it wasn't good.
Well, of course, he went to Groton later, and he wasn't as you know, when you're not in the first form, as they say in the English system, you know, you sort of have to play catch-up, and all the other cliques are formed. And you know, and I know, reflective of Lord of the Flies, that, you know, young people can be pretty... the good, bad, and ugly, mostly the bad and the ugly, regarding things.
Yes. It's interesting that Lord of the Flies was written by someone who was a teacher and got how kids could be. And J.K. Rowling, who wrote the Harry Potter books, was a teacher.
Mm.
Because, again, kids can be the most wonderful human beings on Earth, or they could be piranha.
Yeah, very, very tribal, very territorial. jealousies.
Yeah.
And as a person who has a very smart wife, daughter-in-law, and sister, frankly, I don't want to get into any collective views on how women can be amongst even themselves. So we all have our cross to bear, one way or another. We're going to go to a commercial break before we hear from another word of our sponsors. Of course, this is The Advocates with Richard J. Garfunkel on WJUB 103.9 FM, radio in Jupiter. On a Sunday morning at 8 a.m., I've been talking to my guest about very interesting stuff about the presidency, Professor James Longo, Chairman of the Education Department at Washington and Jefferson University in Washington, PA. We'll just go to a break for a few seconds and come back with our last segment. Welcome back to The Advocates and my guest, Professor James Longo. I'm Richard Garfunkel, and this is WJUP 103.9 FM in Jupiter, New York, Jupiter, Florida, pardon me, on Sunday. There are a lot of New Yorkers here. On Sunday morning at 8 a.m., January 17th, I've been talking to my guest, Professor James Longo, Chairman of the Education Department of Washington and Jefferson University, about presidents, their views of history. We've been talking about who's been good students, who've been bad students, who make their mark, and it's not really predicted, and they make their mark. So you got to teach them something. You know, in this morning's last segment, speaking of presidents, everyone on this planet knows there's a presidential election this year, 2016. We are in the midst of a very expensive presidential cycle. There are estimates that predict there'll be over $10 billion spent by the various candidates, far usurping $7 billion spent in 2012. There's a great deal of inflammatory rhetoric that seems to be fulminated with all this money. Professor Longo, can you review some of our past elections where incendiary rhetoric seemed to obscure issues? What were some of the real bad ones?
Well, first of all, I would just say that the poisonous rhetoric is nothing new at all. The difference is we have a 24-hour news cycle. That makes a huge difference. But politics have always been dirty. In 1800, John Quincy Adams and Thomas Jefferson, two of the most remarkable, gifted people who ever lived in the White House, were running for president against each other. Horrible rhetoric against each other. Jefferson said of Adams that he's neither as forceful or fierce, firm as a man, and he misses all the gentleness and sensibility of a woman. He cast aspersions on his gender. Adams said of Jefferson that if Jefferson would be elected, your homes would be in flames, your wives and daughters would be violated, your children would be murdered. Now, that did not happen.
That's true.
These two had been friends, and of course, at the end of their life, they became friends again. But during the election, it was a very dirty election, one of the dirtiest in 1800.
No holds barred.
No, and when Andrew Jackson ran against John Quincy Adams in 1824, Jackson's wife, Rachel, who he loved deeply, became a big issue, because she was accused of being a bigamist, because she had thought she was divorced from her first husband, but it turned out he never filed the papers, and so she was married to Jackson. And she became a major issue in the campaign, that there was going to be this terrible woman in the White House who was a divorcee, or a bigamist, or a slut. And Rachel actually begged him not to run because she didn't want her name pulled through the mud. He was elected. She was buying a dress to go to their inauguration, and in the dressing room she heard women talking about her, about what a terrible thing it was to have this slut in the White House. She left there. She went back home, got in bed, died. And people say of a broken heart. And Jackson blamed his political enemies for the death of his wife.
Wow.
And he went to the White House one angry man.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a very angry presidency.
Right. And, of course, we have something like 1860 and later on 1960, two pretty rough campaigns. Yes.
Very rough. Lincoln said of Stephen Douglas that he was as round as he was fat. And Douglas said of Lincoln that he had a hatchet face, which was true.
Right.
But what that had to do with being president, I'm not sure. But very vicious, very, very vicious. 1960, Nixon versus Kennedy. There was a whispering campaign about Kennedy's religion. It came out. Religion was a big, big issue in that campaign. A lot of people didn't want a Catholic in the White House. Harry Truman said, "It's not about the Pope, it's about the Pop. I can't stand his father."
And, yes, that's true.
And they were Democrats.
Right. Yeah, and Eleanor Roosevelt wondered. Eleanor Roosevelt was not very high on Catholics, even though her husband, FDR, was very close to Catholics and had tremendous Catholic support. And, of course, Missy Lehen and Grace Tully were Catholics and worked for the Archdiocese before they worked for FDR.
And as far as he was concerned, were family to him.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And his secretaries were very important.
And, of course, the 1960 campaign harked back to 28, when Al Smith endured a great deal of animosity towards his, you know, religion as, you know, a New York Lower East Side Catholic.
Yes. Well, I remember one story of Smith campaigning for president, and the train was going along the tracks, and he looked out, and on hilltops he could see burning crosses.
Right. Well,
and one of my mother's earliest memories was they had an Al Smith poster in their window, and somebody put a brick through the window. and they kept thinking, this has to be a neighbor. I mean, a neighbor did this. She said she was terrified.
Right. We're running down in time, and before we close, Professor Longo, tell us about your new book that's coming, you're working on. If you don't want to give away anything, don't. But if you you want to tell us a little bit about it in 30 seconds or so.
I'm writing a book that I started in Austria about Archduke Franz Ferdinand's three orphan children who Hitler personally had a vendetta against and spent much of the war trying to make their life a living hell, sending two of them to Dachau and two of their children to the Russian front that they never returned from.
Well, that should be a very interesting story. Talk about history. That's right in the belly of the beast, you know, and that's really right where it is. We've still got a short period of time. I'm going to put your feet to the fire. Have you any predictions about who the two, as an expert on the presidency, who the two nominees will be from either party, or will there be a third party race? What, any thoughts that you want to...
I think it's too soon to tell.
Okay.
I do think it's interesting that even when some of these presidents ran for office when they were kids, Johnson and Nixon were involved in dirty politics in college. Hillary Clinton lost an election because she was a woman.
Right.
And she lost the student council election. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see if history repeats itself.
Well, I like how you dodge that. It's all right. It's all right. It's okay. I have a lot of opinions, as is well known. So I can't see Hillary not winning on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, I'm going to say it's going to be Romney. I got a feeling they're going to be a brokered convention, and they'll talk about that.
Certainly up in Massachusetts and in Republican back circles, this is what I'm hearing too. We'll see.
Yeah, you never know.
Be some surprises in this election yet.
Thank you for joining me today. It was a wonderful hour. I loved it. Okay. And
me too. Thank you.
We're going to get you back later in the season when things really get hot. You know, when the rhetoric gets there. We're going to revisit this. Okay.
great.
Very good. Thank you very much for joining me today. If you want to hear this broadcast or any of the other archived Advocates broadcasts, you can access them on my website, www.theadvocatesradio.com, where information on my guests is always posted in the audio. Next week, I'll be hosting Gordon Zuckerman, the author of Sentinel Series and A Matter of Importance. We'll talk about the economy, politics, and how it's changed since his last appearance on The Advocates in 2013. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week at 8 a.m. for another edition of The Advocates. Thank you.